supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
From WHYY and First Person Arts in Philadelphia, this is Common Space. I'm your host, Jamie J. Here on Common Space, live storytelling connects us to each other and the world. And I'll take you deeper into the stories with conversations that might just challenge your perceptions. Have you ever heard of the abbreviation GGG? I didn't. I learned that it's a term coined by sex columnist Dan Savage. It stands for good, giving, and game. He says that sexual partners should be triple G with each other. Good in bed, giving of equal time and pleasure, and game for everything. Within reason, of course. And today on the show, we're exploring stories about people and partners who are open to new experiences, who don't kink shame, and who have a darn good time along the way. This podcast contains some adult content, so listener discretion is advised. We'll start where all good stories begin, with a phone sex operator.
When I first started doing phone sex professionally, it was during this kind of weird period in my life when I was still kind of young and wild, but I had gotten myself into this situation where I was being required to stay home and stay out of trouble. The story is that I was working at the time as an egg donor for a fertility clinic. And when I came aboard, they had made me sign this contract for clean living. So, like, no cigarettes, no drugs, no heavy drinking, and absolutely no sex until they got their eggs. But I signed the contract because it was just for a couple months, and they were going to pay me a fortune. And also, I wanted to be an egg donor. Because if you think about it, it's kind of an interesting proposition. I was actually being given the opportunity to impregnate another woman, right? Like, that thought just fills me with this, like, lusty virility. But there I was, stuck at home on my couch, just me and my telephone. So that's when I decided to try and channel all that repressed virility into something a little more productive, right? So before I get to the phone sex, I just want to say that I was an awesome egg donor. They were able to get 40 eggs out of my body in just one retrieval. Thank you. And they were really good eggs. So my potential progeny could take up like the first four rows of this audience. Sometimes I like to picture them like marching. And even though I'll never know what actually became of any of those eggs, I do think it's pretty likely that there is at least one little person out there somewhere. And I guess she'd be about 9 years old. But anyway, so you guys think I'd make a good phone sex operator? Not really. It's not that I can't be sexy. I think I'm actually kind of good at figuring out what men want and using that to guide them to climax. But that is not actually what makes a good phone sex operator. Uh-uh. If you want to make any money at it, the trick is all about, like, turning them on really slowly and then, like, never quite letting them get there, which was hard for me at first. Like, I just didn't get it. I'd finish up some call that I thought was really hot, and I'd hang up feeling good. But then my boss was always listening in on the line, and she'd be like, "That was 2 minutes 40, Freya. You got to get your head in the game." So I had a lot of satisfied customers, but no, I wasn't making any money. But I do want to tell you about this one call that I thought was really interesting when I finally got a chance to log some real minutes. And I knew this guy was going to be a little different when he told me that he had a passion for community theater. So as I go through this, I just want you guys to picture, like, that it's some long, drawn-out kind of back-and-forth role play, even though I'm just going to give you the gist of it real quick because we're almost out of time. So in this role play, I am a model working at an upscale department store where he is the manager. And when I get back to the wardrobe room, I undress, and the makeup person completely covers my body in this, like, light powder. And then she dresses me again in something chic. And they tell me that my job is going to be to stand up in the window display all day long like a human mannequin. So I get up there and, like, get into position, and I find that it is unusually easy to stay in just, like, the same position all day long. And then it's getting dark in the store, and the store becomes completely empty. And I try to get down out of the window display, but I can't move a muscle. And that's when I realize that the powder that they put all over my body was not makeup at all, but this mysterious chemical that has transformed me into a mannequin. And then I hear his heavy footsteps walking up behind me. So he picks me up and takes me to the back room. And he's like stroking my mannequin skin. And it gets into this foreplay, which is kind of passive on my part. But he's into it. And then it escalates into this like rough mannequin blowjob. And then he gets there. And guys, it was awesome. It was like so many minutes. And then afterwards, he's done. But like he still wants to talk. So he goes, "Nice job. So tell me a little bit about yourself." And I say, "Well, I work as a waitress at a topless bar in the French Quarter." And he says, "Oh, and if I came in, would you wait on me?" And I said, "Sure, baby, you just tell me what you need." And he says, "And what if I started running my fingers up the inside of your leg, up under your skirt? And now I'm feeling confident, so I want to draw it out even more." So I try teasing him a little bit, and I say, can't touch there." But then he says, "That's what you think. But as soon as my fingers touch your wet little panties, you turn straight into a mannequin." Guys, he was really into mannequins. I mean, so interesting. I always wondered what it would be like to be with that guy, for real. He's out there somewhere, too. I wonder if he's ever been able to tell his lover what he really wants. All that fascinating private desire, most of which never gets anywhere past our own imagination or maybe an anonymous phone call. Because even if you're really kinky, there are just some things that you cannot bring to the bedroom. Like, take me for example. I get turned on by artificially inseminating other women. And that is just not practical.
Freya Zork is a nurse practitioner whose work has been featured in multiple podcasts, including Risk, Storied League, and, of course, WHYY's Common Space. She recently departed Philly for a life in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Hi, I'm Dr. Timmery. I have a PhD in human sexuality. I'm a sexologist, sex educator.
To unpack these stories, we asked Dr. Timmery Schmidt, a sexologist and self-described stripper with a PhD, to sit down with associate producer Jen Cleary.
Freya becomes a phone sex operator in order to pass the time while she's waiting for her eggs to be harvested. And she gets a phone call from a gentleman who is very interested in mannequins.
Well, it's interesting. There's so many different angles to take on this because, like, my first thought is, so you have to be sober, so your first thought is phone sex operator. Like, I just kind of love that that is the, like, total, like, non sequitur decision. Not quilting, not trading stocks, specifically that. So that's fun. She makes an aside in the course of it, talking about how part of why her job still exists is that it gives people license to indulge in fantasies that they may never tell their partners. And that's the thing that I've found just as a sex educator, where I'm not necessarily there for fantasy material, but the incredible number of people that I'll meet in an elevator, in a lift, whatever, where they find out what I do, and they now feel compelled to tell me stuff that they haven't told their life partner, that they don't tell somebody they've been with for years, but they'll tell me. And so much of work that's in the sex industry, whether it be education, direct service providing, you know, phone operator, et cetera, is about that, giving people license and permission to just be honest about the stuff that they're into. Because if you're into mannequins, like there's a lot of ways you can interpret that. And certainly there's a nefarious way that you can go with that. There's this like implication that he wants to make women powerless and you know, thoughts of Bill Cosby come to mind. Or it could simply be that he has this interest developed from, I don't know, maybe when he was really young, masturbated after he saw a real sexy mannequin, because some mannequins are real sexy. I've seen some. It could be this thing that he never wants to do on somebody without consent, but has interest in doing with someone if they were consenting. So it's kind of our job to just be like, look, you're not the only person in the world. And even if you were, as long as everybody who's on board with this, you know, like you have my blessing or whatever it is you need.
So also in that story, Freya tells us about when she was a phone sex operator, and it got me thinking about sex work in general and how a lot of people may not even realize that phone sex is sex work.
So the umbrella, the spectrum of sex work is pretty wide, and an individual person might disagree. Like if somebody works somewhere in a field that I might identify as on the spectrum and they say that they are not, I mean, that's their choice. Like if somebody is a stripper, is – you know, they make personalized erotica, whatever. Like, I might consider that, but if they don't, that's our choice. We have this conversation in burlesque a lot. And the idea, though, is when we – anybody in the world has a job, usually you're getting paid for your physical presence, like just standing there being in this room, your physical labor, your emotional labor, your intellectual labor, etc. And lots of us make money out of our – bodies. Some of us make money off of our bodies, like waiting tables or washing dishes or fixing roofs. Other people make money off of their bodies by displaying them or letting other people touch them. And all of those things exist on a spectrum of using what you have to make a living. Sex work that is direct providership is both this physical thing, but it's also emotional labor. And again, a lot of sex workers will use the term provider if they're like a full service provider to differentiate. But sex work in general is providing some sort of either fantasy fulfillment or the perception of having an emotional romantic relationship with someone. And a phone sex operator is just distilled down to the fantasy element. So you don't even have to put on makeup. Like you don't have to go anywhere. You can be wearing your slippies. And for both the people doing that work and the people who are clients, that might be the most enjoyable experience, not wanting to actually cheat on a partner or like put themselves at risk for an STI or worry about pregnancy or any of those sort of things. You just get to have the sapiosexual element of it. That's not how that term is normally used, but you just get to have like the cognitive connection with that person and have someone like talk you through a fantasy. You can picture them looking like whatever you want. There is zero risk. But yeah, it definitely counts as sex work.
The most appealing part of Freya's story for me was talking about her lusty virility when she realizes that she's been impregnating all these women. And I never even thought of egg donorship that way.
Oh, yeah. We don't conceptualize female fertility in the same way. You know, ancient people absolutely did because, like, that's how we are still here alive today. Like, it was to our ancestors' benefit to celebrate fertility and, quite frankly, to enjoy having sex. And so we are the descendants of people who like fuck it. Like, that is in us. That is our nature. That is who we actually are. And female fertility was revered for most of history, but thanks to, quite frankly, sex-negative Christian attitudes and colonization, we have made it so that masculinity is about, like, spreading seed, but femininity is this guarded, like, behind-a-wall thing. It's not a source of empowerment for women. It's a thing that they have to do gatekeeping-wise, and it makes them a possession, and it's part of why so much legislation goes around women's bodies and not men's. So, yeah, I love that idea of, like, finding strength and empowerment in your own ability to be a sexual creature, be a reproductive with that reproductive potential. That's cool as hell.
That's sexologist Dr. Timmery Schmidt and Common Space associate producer Jen Cleary. Our next story comes from Paul Lyons, whose new relationship with a past love improved when he was honest about his sexuality.
I reconnected with Joan on Facebook, and we had dated 27 years ago, and when we were 27, and we hit it off this time, and so I asked her. I said, "Whatever happened, you know, to us?" And she goes, "I don't know." You know, she goes, "Back then, I my parents, you know, had just died. I was divorced. I had a baby. I was a mess." You know, I said, "Yeah." I said, "I was just divorced, and I was a mess too." And I said, "Well, it's not like I'm not a mess now. You know, I'm just more willing to be seen." You know, And we got along great. And a month into the relationship, my willingness to be seen got tested because Joan, we're on the phone, and matter-of-factly said, I can't believe it. You got seven brothers, and no one's gay. And I said, well, I come the closest. And then I got self-conscious because I felt like I didn't want her to think it was just a joke. And I, for the next 20 minutes, I just debated what to tell her because it's something in the past that I would wait 6 months to tell, a woman, after we were in love, just to see if she really loved me. And then I'll drop the bomb and let's see if you really love me. This is who I am. And I figured this time I want to go in. I want to be fully seen now. I just, if it's going to work, it's going to work. If it's not, it's not. So I said, Joan, I just want you to know I've had gay experiences. And she said, oh, she goes, you're even more interesting than I thought. And I'm like, well, I was only looking for acceptance, and I was getting accolades. I'm like, wow, yeah, I'm more intriguing. I'm a character, for crying out loud. And because that was my biggest fear my whole life. So much fear not accepting any of my sexuality. I was brought up Catholic. That's part of it. And then just fear. A fear of being gay, looking gay, anyone thinking I might be gay, accidentally, being enthusiastic about something. as a matter of fact, when I was 12, my brother Chris, 1 year older than me, says anyone who masturbates is gay, right? And I did not want to be gay, so I didn't masturbate. I didn't touch my penis. I know it's my penis, but I'm a guy, right? What if I meet a guy who looks like me? I don't want to get started. I used it to pee, and I tucked it away. Good job and good night. And then I was 20, and I found out that masturbating is normal. So I became very normal. Very normal. And the normal guy got married, but, just wasn't mature. We weren't mature enough and divorced. And I was 27 years old, and I'm in Sydney, Australia. I'm walking down the street, and I meet this beautiful woman outside her hair salon, Marina, right? And she goes, hey, where are you going? I said, right here, I guess. Right? And she brings me inside, and we're just she was beautiful. She was voluptuous. And I'm looking at her, and we're cracking each other up. She makes me coffee. And she goes, you're looking at me like you've never seen breasts before. And I said, well, I've never seen yours. I got game. I say to her, you're looking at me like you've never seen a crotch before. She goes, well, I've never seen yours. I was like, wow, I'm going to get lucky. I'm getting lucky. Right. And we kept cracking each other up. She takes me downstairs. Right. She whispers in my ear. She goes, I hope you're not an axe murderer. I said, well, I've never used an axe. Right. And then I whisper in her ear. I whisper in her ear. And I'm really hard. Right. And then she whispers in my ear and she said, me too. And I'm thinking, this is the funniest woman I've ever been with. This woman is hysterical, right? Right. And then we got undressed, right? And I saw her punchline. I couldn't believe it. I was a little, and in situations like that, I ask myself, what would Jesus do? So I took off right after she blew me. I took off. I did take off, and then I felt bad because I was going like, well, I like her, I'm attracted to her, so I went back. 2 days later, I went back, because she was upset when I left the first time because I didn't touch her, I had just beginning to touch myself, I knew it would lead to that. So anyway, I left, since that experience, I've dated men and women, but I've kept both worlds apart. And coming into the relationship with Joan, I just realized how great it was to just be seen, just who I was. And I feel that to You're only as free as the secrets you're willing to reveal. So that's why I'm here to let you know I'm kind of gay.
Paul Lyons tours the country as a comedian and writer. His first book is called Carpe Diem Mañana, and it's about his spiritual journey from insecurity to self-pity. Here's associate producer Jen Cleary with sexologist Dr. Timmery Schmidt to discuss Paul's story.
Paul Lyons ends up going away on vacation and having sex with a trans woman. And when he has sex with the trans woman, he realizes that he's bisexual. Or as he says it, I'm a little bit gay. And this has opened him up to talking about it with new partners, and specifically this flame that he's trying to rekindle. And Timmery, what did you think when you heard about this?
Well, I want to start it off with a yay, bisexual visibility. I'm always here for that, especially when it's a male-identified person being open about being bi, because I think there's much more stigma for bi men than for bi women. And I am very here for celebrating, you know, the diversity of interests. I would disagree with him on, like, some technical things, because trans woman's a woman. And so what he realized is not that he's bisexual through that encounter. I mean, he can realize whatever he wants and he can call himself whatever he wants. But through a sexual experience with a trans woman, if he identifies as a man, that's still a heterosexual relationship. And what he's instead identified, if this is a trans woman who has a penis, that he is possibly phallophilic, which is a different thing. To be attracted to a penis, to want to have sex with a penis, is a different thing to be attracted to masculine-identified people. And to be attracted to vulvas and be attracted to vaginas is a different thing than being attracted to women, because we are not just our parts. And we are attracted to things besides parts. And to limit us down to that is actually a mistake that people make often when they're trying to hold back gender equality and when they're trying to make transphobic arguments also. So I'm excited for him that he had this experience, and I love that he has discovered that he is bi. Just on a technical level, I would disagree with the A plus B led to C narrative of it. So I'm very happy for him to sleep with whoever he wants to.
Our final story comes from Aaron Stella, whose partner's final goodbye was marked by a night Aaron will never forget.
Just going to get right down to the meat of this. This is about a five-man orgy I had, unexpectedly, at the penthouse of the Cityview Condos, which is at 20th and Callow Hill. I was dating this one young gentleman at one point in time. I really liked him a lot. We dated for about, say, 2 weeks. We had not copulated yet, and I was just, you know, saving all my love for him. And, you know, I found out, he'd sent me an email saying, like, you know, listen, I'm moving to New York, and probably not going to see it again. So I thought, and I didn't want to just, like, go out in some, like, sex-crazed mania and get in my genitalia mascot costume and, you know, find somebody else to save me. So I'm like, all right, well, let's do, you know, one last thing with each other. And he says, sure. Actually, I have the perfect thing. So he says, come to the penthouse in the Cityview Condos. And I thought, oh, you know, he probably has someone's place he got for the evening. It'll be, you know, a really nice romantic evening. And I walk in, and all of a sudden, I see five gorgeous naked men standing in the room, just sort of casually chatting. This is the beforehand of the orgy, mind you. Two of them approached me from either side, really about like this far away. And they just came up to me and said, long day at work? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So they both start to derobe me, which was very sensual. One hands me a glass of champagne, the other one hands me a joint. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'm like, I have all my props, and I see cold cuts on the table, and salad, and goat cheese, and Sarah Silverman's Jesus Magic is playing on the television screen. Two dudes are in the bathroom all of a sudden, just like in the tub, smoking. It's paradise. And then there's the city that's before us, and it's like a giant glass lotus flower just blooming on the night horizon. It was romantic, you know. So that goes until about 6 a.m. in the morning, and, you know, five sore asses later, I leave, and I actually do go to work. And I come back the next day and I realize, oh God, he's going to New York. I had completely forgotten this during that crazy night of debauchery. So I'm like, all right, I've got to like do something with him. So I go back for the second time. I'm met again by who I believe are the same men who handed me a joint and a glass of champagne. It seems that they reordered the cold cuts and the salads. It was totally like a Groundhog Day. And I seek him out, and we made love in front of the giant, just like, vista window in front of the city, and it was just, it was really lovely. But you know what? Even though I never saw him again, I walked away with 5 new friends. And that's my story.
That was storyteller Aaron Stella. Let's bring the conversation back to associate producer Jen Cleary and sexologist Dr. Timmery Schmidt for her final thoughts on Aaron Stella's story.
And the last story that we have is Aaron Stella talking about being in this orgy, which is great. It's a great present he got. And I think it was actually a really, really wonderful experience. I thought it was really loving of his partner to invite him to this penthouse and to send him on his way with this orgy. It's a really great gift.
Yeah, so that's great. And I just love that he talked about it, like in general, because we have a fair amount of data that people engage in group sex on a more frequent basis than media would like to depict. Like, it's still this whoa-wee, like wacky, like and it's almost always depicted as like two women and a man kind of things for group sex, but people have been fucking in groups since people have been fucking. That's, you know, we grew up originally as a species in this tribal way. Like, this is again one of those things that we just do. Not everybody has to do group sex, to clarify. You don't have to do any sexual thing you don't want to do, ever. This is not to say that you are a better person or more sex positive or anything if you have one experience or another. That's not to say that. I just want to point out that, like, the idea that a partner would facilitate that is beautiful and giving. And one of the words that people in the polyamory and ethical non-monogamy circles use is compersion. It's the opposite of jealousy. So rather than feeling like my partner is doing something with that other person and that hurts me, that hurts our relationship, which is still a thing that can be present. You can have both compersion and jealousy. But instead of just having that, compersion is the feeling that like, I am happy because my partner is happy. Your joy brings me joy. It's like when you see somebody open up a present that you know makes them very happy. And it's easy for us to be like, oh, I'm so excited for you. You got that unicorn t-shirt. That's so great. You're going to love that. Oh my God, I'm so happy for your brownie sundae. But there's something about sexuality where we feel like that is taking away. But the wonderful thing about being an adult is you can construct your romantic and sexual relationships however the hell you want. And if you want to be partners with someone, but that doesn't mean that that's the only person you sleep with, and the two of you are on board with that, the six of you are on board with that, the 12 of you are on board with that, as long as everybody knows what's happening and agrees to it and can, you know, renegotiate the terms at any time, by all means. Just reminding everybody, my birthday's coming up.
Timmery, I want to say thank you so much for being on this episode and breaking down all these stories with me. Thank you so much for being here.
This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Common Space, a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY, and it's been supported by the Pew Center for Arts and Heritage. Our Common Space team includes executive producer and co-writer Elizabeth Perez Luna, producer Mike Villers, associate producers Ali L'Esperance and Jen Cleary, Tanisha Ford from First Person Arts, and archivist Dr. Neil Barden. Our engineer was Al Banks, and our theme music is by Subglow. I'm your host, producer, and co-writer Jamie J. Thanks so much for listening.